back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are officially into the offseason. It brings us no joy to sit around and watch the likes of the Bengals and the Steelers and the Raiders and the Patriots and the Bills have all the fun. The Titans aren't even having any fun this week. They're off. Luke Jones is not off. We will be seeing as the coaching wheel turns, as the super wild card weekend begins, and probably, you know, fallout of all of this, including the extent of Lamar's injury to not play and have not played, the six-game losing streak, the loss of the Steelers, the Big Ben exit that's not really an exit because he's going to be playing on my television on Sunday night again. Luke, I want to start the whole thing with this because anywhere you start with Stanley or Peters or Dobbins or injuries or coaches or where Steve Bisciotti or any of the other stuff, to me, the biggest thing that's going to happen in this offseason or any offseason is what are they going to do at the quarterback position? What are they going to pay? How are they going to sign? And they now have literally the worst nightmare, which is got off to a good start despite some bad things. He's Superman. We're 8-3 just because of this kid, and he makes mistakes, and yeah, but he'll get better, and we need to get better around him. And, you know, we didn't even have an offensive line. And look at – and then he gets hurt. And I always go back to you and I sitting up on the roof in Canton, Ohio, that first preseason game, him running around on that concrete out there, and – us having that awkward angle to look down and watch him run into linebackers and sort of like shudder and pull back. I still think the original sin of all of this is if you can't get him on the field in January, doesn't matter whether he's worth $40 million, $50 million, five-year deal, 10-year deal, wherever. This is the worst-case scenario. You don't plan around, much like you know, Peyton Manning, you don't plan around not having him. But now you have to pay him. And I think that that's where this becomes more interesting now that we're into, as Brian Billick would say, the time for play was Sunday. Now it's the time for pay on the other side. And everything, every spoken wheel moves around Lamar, Lamar's health, Lamar's salary, and then who's going to be his left tackle and his right guard and blah, blah, blah down the line.
Yeah, and that's where everything else gets a little more challenging when he's going to be making more money. And that's not even talking about whatever the ultimate long-term contract terms are. That's just talking about what he's going to be making in 2022, which at this point is a little over $23 million in base salary. So it does make things more difficult. I think, you know, going back to the injury element, I mean, look, quarterbacks are going to get hurt just like any other position on the field. And that's not to say that you can completely paralyze yourself and say, well, if he gets hurt once, then that's it. And he's always going to be hurt then at that point. But guys are going to get hurt. Dak Prescott got hurt last year. Tom Brady famously tore his ACL in week one in 2008. I mean, pocket passers get hurt. Guys who have the ball get hurt. I mean, that's going to be what happens. Now, I think in the back of your mind, there is that concern as he gets older. And that concern as far as, you know, age 25 is one thing, but when he's 28 or 29, is he as mobile? What does his passing look like at that point in time? He's certainly gotten better throwing the football from where he was as a rookie compared to where he's been the last couple of years, but does it continue to grow? So all these questions are there, and they were always there, to be very clear. You know, nothing changes in that regard, but I think what's disappointing and now what becomes tricky for the organization is the inexpensive portion of his rookie contract has expired now. And that's why I'll continue to go back over and over and over again until they break through whenever that happens. That's why I look back to 2 years ago as such a missed opportunity when they were 14-2 and home field advantage and they had won 12 in a row and you have the MVP of the league and you had what? 12 other Pro Bowl players. And they,
and they had Marshall Yanda. I would just throw that in. That's all.
Of course. Although I'll say Kevin Zeitler played really well this year. You know, right guard, as much as that was an issue a year ago, that was not an issue for them. Now, other issues on the other positions on the offensive line certainly were. But the point is, as much as the thought then when they lost was, it was really easy to say, oh, they're a year ahead of schedule, or they're really young, or they'll be back in this position. You never really know. And it's not to say the panic. I still feel good about where this football team is moving forward.
By the way, so just so you know, yeah.
Right. Dan Marino. Dan Marino looked like he was going to be the greatest quarterback of all time in 1984. Never got back to a Super Bowl. So you never really know. And that's, again, not to say they're doomed. It's just, it's why it's really, really important to take advantage of your opportunities. I mean, how many guys on that 2006 Ravens team, and we talked about that at the time of their loss 2 years ago, where you look back and say, wow, it was sitting right there. Yeah, you held Peyton Manning and the Colts to 5 field goals and you lost in your own building.
Those are the types of losses. I had to think about this with Roethlisberger this week, because all the love for him and Cowher and Tomlin, and 3 years with Cowher and 15 years with Tomlin, and now the Steelers have never had a losing season and like all of that. Roethlisberger's won 2. Lost 1, probably feels like he should have won 4 more, right? Flacco certainly has great vibe on thinking he should have won 1 more, maybe 2 more. Drew Brees probably thinks he should have won 3 more, right? I mean, Manning didn't win enough. Neither of the Mannings won enough because of Tom Brady, right? So all of these guys, even the Hall of Famers, I mean, I'm watching Russell Wilson now get treated like a day-old head of lettuce. And you know what I mean? And he, like, all the... Aaron Rodgers now, he's the flavor of the month. Tannehill's got a bye, and he's going to have a chance to be this guy. But, you know, even Roethlisberger, all these years and all that, he has to say there were these years where we coulda, shoulda, woulda, you know, and all that. And that's if you get 18 of them. He got 18 of them.
It's really, really, really difficult to do. You have to be playing at such a high level, and oh yeah, luck is way more involved in this thing than anyone cares to admit. Go back and look at the 2000 Ravens. Go back and look at the Mile High Miracle in 2012. I mean, there are a few exceptions here and there over the course of the Super Bowl era. Sure, there were some teams that were just so dominant start to finish that you just say, yep, they were the best and they deserved to win the Super Bowl. How many years, though, especially in the salary cap era, have we looked at teams? I mean, look at the Ravens in 2000 and 2012. They both had 5-game stretches in the regular season where they didn't look like a playoff team, let alone talking about the team that ultimately won it all. But the point is, it's really difficult. And other than Tom Brady, or if you want to go back to, I don't know, Troy Aikman in the 90s, Joe Montana in the 80s, Terry Bradshaw. We're just going back to it was a different sport then. I mean, it really was, especially with the financial structure and all that, but it's really difficult to do. And you just said it. You just fired off a handful of Hall of Fame quarterbacks or guys that were Hall of Very Good, and they only did it once, or maybe they did it twice. Tom Brady's kind of the exception that is still crazy. And if you and I are talking a month from now about the Buccaneers winning another Super Bowl, are either of us going to be surprised? I'm not. But that's not the exception. That's not the standard. That's such an extraordinary outlier that you do kind of lose sight of how difficult this is. And that's not to apologize for Lamar Jackson or John Harbaugh or the organization.
The Bengals climbed the mountain and got in, and the Steelers found the back door, albeit the Chargers have their feelings hurt right now, and the Colts have their feelings hurt. They all thought they were making the playoffs. Like, we thought they were making the playoffs the whole year, right? The Colts and the Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, but it's difficult. And you have some injuries. You have some rough luck. You have some questionable decisions, as, you know, if people want to talk about the two-point conversions, all of that with the Ravens. They fell short. And again, they didn't have their guy out there. They didn't have their franchise quarterback out there over the last month of the season. That's difficult to overcome. I mean, let's look at this playoff field right now. Who are you looking to and saying, you know, other than teams that have kind of a questionable quarterback situation? I mean, as much as you give them credit for how he played at the end of the game, Jimmy Garoppolo in San Francisco, all they've talked about all year is replacing him and him not being good enough. But you go down the list of all these teams, for the most part, they had quarterbacks who stayed healthy this year. And one team that had an issue with that Kyler Murray and the Cardinals, look at how badly they faded down the stretch to the point where, you know, a month ago, you thought that they were might have been the favorite in the NFC, or 6 weeks ago, you thought they might have been the favorite in the NFC. And now, yeah, they feel like a team that's going to be one and done, or has a very good chance to be one and done.
That's why power rankings in November has never moved me. You know what I mean? Like where you are Thanksgiving, nice. It's a nice gauge, but it doesn't tell me anything about, dude, we're going into this tournament right now. I have no idea who's going to win. I mean, Buffalo looks good all of a sudden. Right? I mean, there's some teams that look decent all of a sudden that didn't 3 weeks ago. And this is really where, how are you playing right now? Cincinnati's playing well right now. I mean, historically, usually the uniforms get to them, you know, long before anything else. But this is an interesting tournament, I think. And the way they've structured the buys and who's going to have to play whom and where they're going to have to go. We're going to sit and watch this, but if I had to go bet it right now and I have to say go to Vegas, I can walk right over there and bet it now. Thank you, Maryland legislature, if I wish to. I could even have a parlay like Wink Martindale last week if I wish to. We can even speak in those terms now. All sponsors welcome. Bring all the gambling dough on. But and maybe we'll make our picks this week. How about that, Luke? Let's make the picks. Find the intangibles. Maybe that'll be our new shtick around here, picking football games. I probably pretty good at it, actually. But the tournament itself, very, very interesting. And I think from the strengths and weaknesses of organizations and teams getting in here, an interesting mix of quarterbacks and players to keep everybody focused on this. But out in Owings Mills, they're focused on a whole different thing, which is Lamar and how do we find ourselves playing in the tournament this time next year. What's going to be the concoction that's going to make that happen? Because as constructed right now, they're not good enough.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, you just said it. There's work to do. And as much as I just said how difficult this is a team that, let's face it, Nestor, they haven't been to an AFC championship game in 9 years now, which that's not to say that that means everyone should be fired or you need to make massive changes or anything like that, but that it does illustrate there's some urgency at this point. There has to be, especially you kind of consider where they are with Lamar Jackson right now entering year five, where they were with Joe Flacco. And I'm not talking about a direct comparison between those two going into year five, but you know, what did the rest of the roster look like in both cases? You know, where were they old? Where were they young? Where did they need more talent? Where are they feeling pretty good about themselves? I mean, these are all the things that you have to do, but now you're talking about it in terms of you no longer have that flexibility of a rookie contract with your quarterback. $23 million is still a bargain for Lamar Jackson. Contrary to what his biggest critics might suggest, it absolutely is still a bargain. But is it the same $2.5 million bargain that it's been in recent years? No. So things become more challenging and becomes even more important to have that 14th overall pick now, which is what they're slotted to have, as opposed to sneaking in the tournament and playing in wild card weekend. And let's face it, I mean, I think there are a lot of Ravens fans that had kind of, you know, before Indianapolis lost on Sunday, a lot of fans had made their peace that this season was coming to an end, right? I mean, a lot of fans were saying that this is over and Lamar's not out there. Marlon Humphrey's not out there. They didn't have Marcus Peters all year. Ronnie Stanley was gone after week one. I mean, you go down the list and you kind of make your peace with the fact that the 2021 Ravens weren't good enough. And, you know, there's certain things that were in control, but there was a lot that wasn't. And I think you kind of come to peace with that. And that's where you then say, well, even if they snuck in the playoffs, I mean, if they had been the team going to Kansas City, playing the Chiefs on Sunday night, would that really have been, you know, something that you had high expectations for? Probably not. I'm guessing the Steelers are going to get their butts kicked in that game. Why? Because I kind of look, as much as we say this is a wide open field, there are two teams that I point to right now who I would give the edge to: Kansas City and the AFC, because they've done it in recent years. And I'd point to Tom Brady and the Buccaneers in the NFC because, well, it's Tom frickin' Brady. And as much as we've tried to write the guy off and say he's 44 years old, he keeps winning and he keeps doing it. And yeah, there's some other compelling teams. There's no question about that. That's not to say that those two teams are locks to reunite and meet again in the Super Bowl for the second straight year. But if you're asking me to handicap it, that's who I'm looking to. Or, you know, maybe Aaron Rodgers, even though you could have said the same thing about them a year ago and they came up short. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into this, but, you know, if you're the Ravens, even if they made it, there wasn't the upside there. I mean, the team had lost so much upside even before the season started. I mean, we talked about that with the Dobbins injury, right? We talked about that with Marcus Peters.
I go back, 58 weeks ago when Ronnie Stanley went down, and I turned to my wife and said, they can't win the Super Bowl without him. I literally believed that last year. And now that we're, 16 games of playing without him, 5 games of playing without Lamar, 16 games of or 14 games without playing without Marcus Peters, a half dozen games of playing without Marlon Humphrey. You go through all of that. It's not good enough. And it would be, it's 0-6. This is an 0-6 outfit playing as they're playing right now. Point here, point there, but 1-5, 2-4, whatever it would be, it wouldn't be good enough. And to your point, all of these Calais Campbells, Brandon Williams, the guys that are the over 30 club that you're going to pull out of this thing, and that's not to say Villanueva, Zeitler will be back next year, obviously, at least he believes he will be, but the Sammy Watkins, these different guys, this class is over with. And, I'll get onto the media thing, not in this segment. We're going to take that on as a tour de force at some point here in the off season. But I didn't get a question in the post game. I had my hand raised at one point, and I probably had the same question for every person that I would have asked, whether it was Harbaugh or Calais Campbell, which was, it feels very much to me as a fan, as a media member, as a critic, as a local person trying to talk people out of the tree, that this season for me will always be very incomplete. When you lose this many people, it's just an incomplete. And that doesn't buy Harbaugh or DeCosta or anybody any slack on any of this. But this was just – this isn't to be judged. It's like not – it's like a movie that shouldn't have been shown, quite frankly. It wasn't right. It's not what they orchestrated.
Yeah, and that's where – that's why I've said this to you so many different times, going back to 2015, that injury marred season. They lose Suggs at the beginning of the year. They lost, go down the list of the guys they lost that year, and it kind of finished up with losing Joe Flacco and some guys later on in the season when it had already gone sideways. But, that's why I kind of, the next man up thing sounds great. And believe me, I understand players and coaches. They have no other choice. You don't just pack it in when you lose the guys that they lost early in the season and just say, we're not going to play. We know we're done. We're just going to, we're just going to call it a season. We're going to forfeit. Teams don't do that, right? And nor should they. But the point is, when I hear people say next man up, when you're talking about some of the guys that they lost, I mean, if it truly is that simple and you truly think that the guy coming in should be, there shouldn't be that much drop off, then why the hell are you paying these guys all this money then if they're that expendable, right? I mean, seriously, with that logic where you're just going to say next man up, next man up, next man up, because like, it's just this ritualistic thing that fans and players and coaches say at this point, and even media, we're guilty of it too. But it's not to say that you pack it in or you give up, but if it's not, if it's not a dooming blow for your defense to lose Marcus Peters and Marlon Humphrey, then why the hell are you paying them so much money? If Tyler Huntley truly is as good as Lamar Jackson, which, some of those takes were silly to begin with, but clearly, Huntley got exposed a little bit.
It was kind of fun to hear the ignorance of the fan base at that point when the backup quarterback goes out and the guy's been an MVP and they're like, let's sign him instead. I'm like, oh, Jesus, that's where we are. It reminds me of seeing the games now where they put up on the scoreboard the visiting team doesn't like it when you make noise when they're on offense. It's like, really? Okay, all right. I should have read that on the interweb before. I should have found that in the game program when I came up today. I don't know what to say, but there is a point in all of this where if you would have came back, if I'd have been on the moon the last 3 months, he came back and said, Lamar missed the last month, Humphrey got hurt in November, Stanley never made it to post, Boyerly never made it back, blah, 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 blah. I wouldn't have said, well, how many 66-yard field goals did Tucker hit to win them? I wouldn't have said that.
You're probably saying it would be a heck of a chore for this team to be hovering around 500. And again, the order, the sequence, and how it played out is where yeah, it feels really rotten and it feels lousy to lose six in a row to end a season. There's no question about that. I mean, again, I don't want to be dismissive of that. And that's not to say that there isn't accountability and there aren't
going to
be things that they need
to address.
Yeah, you
almost have to be pissed off just because, right?
Right, right. But again, because of what you just said, and let's say it plays out here. You know, let's just do a little exercise here. Let's say instead of winning six straight one-score games as they did after that loss to the Raiders, let's say they went 4-2 in those one-score games. And instead of being 8-3, they would have been, what, 7-5. And then you lose Lamar Jackson. Is anyone really that stunned? Oh, you know, is any, you know, they would have been, I guess, 7. They would have been 7-4. I guess it would have been. Would anyone have been that stunned? Or if they were 6-5 rather than 8-3, and then they lose Lamar Jackson, finishing 8-9 at that point, and they win a couple of these games at the end of the year just because it just plays out differently. The end result's the same. You still finish 8-9, and you're still out of the playoffs. My point is, these games have a lot more variance, a lot more luck, a lot more, many more random events and random occurrences over the course of 60 minutes. Yes, we focus on 2-point conversions and things of that nature, those types of decisions. And look, John Harbaugh has to be accountable for those. As I said, I supported the one in Pittsburgh because they were out of corners. I didn't really love the one in Green Bay because of the timing of it. I would have gone for two on the previous touchdown. So I didn't like that. I didn't like the sequence of that. The one in Cleveland was the one a lot of people debated. I understood that. And again, he followed that logic, but then didn't follow the same logic against Green Bay. So there's plenty of room for second guessing. And just because analytics suggest to do something doesn't mean that you always do that. Because if you're going to be completely blind by the book in that direction, how's that any better or how's that any worse than the old school coaches who never want to do anything other than just be risk averse? So again, all these different games over the course of 60 minutes, how many different plays, how many different decisions are made, plays are made, plays aren't made. And, you know, like I said, they had a lot of in-game fortune that went their way early in the season that kind of combated all the injuries and all the off-field bad injury luck they had. But then the worm turned, and I vividly remember, you can go back at BaltimorePositive.com, my 12 thoughts after that first Steelers loss. I called it a market correction because they had won all these close games and they'd figured out ways to pull out games at the very end. Well, they lost that one. I didn't think they were going to continue to lose one score games the rest of the way. So they were unlucky in that way. But, you know, again, the end result, you take a step back. To your point, if you were on Mars the last 4 months and then you come back and you see Lamar Jackson's not playing and your Pro Bowl corners aren't playing, your all pro left tackle's not playing, you lost your top three running backs. I mean, all of this, you look at it and you'd say, you know what? 8-9 sounds about right then. And it stinks. It's not fun. You don't want to miss the playoffs. But again, there's a reason why you pay all these guys the money you pay them. It's the reason why the Ravens are going to pay Lamar Jackson whatever he ultimately makes. And when you lose those guys, yeah, you try to do the best you can and you try to fill in and you try to win some games here and there. And they did it for a pretty sizable portion of the season without some of those guys. And then, you know, magic ran out. You lose Marlon Humphrey. You lose the game in Pittsburgh. You try to go for two. You don't get it. You lose Lamar Jackson a quarter later in Cleveland the following week. And it was all over from that point. We didn't know it because we thought Lamar would come back at some point. And John did the gamesmanship thing, and you know, that lots of teams do with players and injuries and all that. But you know, when Lamar went down and wasn't going to come back for the rest of the regular season, they were done. If they sneak into the playoffs, you know, is he playing in Kansas City this coming week? I have no idea. Maybe, maybe not. And if not, guess what? Going to lose. So in the big picture, I mean, it's just,
well,
it is what it
you
is.
Know, for Lamar, and the long tail of this is going to be you and I talking about how he was playing the game in November before the injury. Yeah. And what happened to the running game and how he became the running game again, which is one of the ways to get him hurt, is running him into the Vikings 21 times and then going back and playing in Miami 4 days later, which I think still the last question I got to ask John. Maybe I got one more in there between then and now. And who knows when the next one will be. And certainly I'm out looking for the owner and the general manager and anybody else we can ask questions to. That'll be – That'll be my cross to bear here in the offseason is when do we get to ask questions of the elite in Owings Mills and how these answers come. But the real story will be if you're going to win a Super Bowl, you can't be playing the way Lamar was playing in November at all. And they would say, well, we would have Dobbins. We would have Boyle. We would have Ricard. We would have Stanley. Yes. And we would have Bateman too. And you'd have Hollywood. And you'd have Mark Andrews, who's now, you know, on this side of the ghost of Dave Casper at this point, right? So, I mean, I can be sold that the Atlanta Falcons are going to have a hard time with the Ravens next year for all the above reasons, and we're going to draft this slobber knocker, guard from Iowa in the first round, and we're going to draft a defensive lineman, and we're going to make a splash signing, and look at Peters is healthy, look at him run around out there, and Marlins come back nicely, and Patrick Queen's a year further along on this, and look, we got Calais, but we let Brandon Williams go. Calais wanted to come back, and Justin Houston was a nice fit here, and we liked him and let him come back in, and so I don't know, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of change, quite frankly. For 8 and 9, there have been years we've been 13-3 around this joint and had half the team leave, right? And three coaches leave and three guys go become head coaches and the old man Mattson retire. You know, all that goes on in these good years. We haven't had a whole lot of six-game losing streak. Quarterback's gimpy. Quarterback needs to get paid $250 million, doesn't have an agent, doesn't have a vaccine. Down the line as to where they are as an organization with their commitments to Ronnie Stanley, Marlon Humphrey, Marcus Peters, Mark Andrews, where the money is, where the money's going to go, what they really think of Patrick Queen, what they really think of Matabike at this point, or some other, or Bowser, or some of these other guys, now that they have a book on some of the guys who did, the handful of guys who stayed healthy this year. There aren't a whole lot. I mean, there might have been a dozen guys that stayed out on the field and played 16 games this year.
I mean, their list of guys that started all 17 games.
I said 16. I'm such an idiot. I'm sorry.
It's okay. No, it's okay.
Turn an 8-9 campaign into a 500 year?
I don't want to deflect from what you just said because you just made excellent points, and I'm in agreement with basically everything you just said. You know what is interesting, and you're going to be surprised to hear this from me. For the first time in a while, I don't think wide receiver is a major need for them. Now, the perfect opportunity comes along that some guy in the draft is just sitting there that you love. And, you know, you're debating what's going to happen with Marquise Brown because he's entering, you know, that portion of is that heading towards the end of his contract, fifth year option, all those things that you talk about.
And drop some balls on Sunday, by the way.
Yeah. And we didn't mention that. I mean, he kind of came up small on two different occasions. You know, I mean, the end zone drop, did Tyler Huntley throw a bullet there? And I understand the conditions were rough with the rain, but hey, you're a 1,000-yard receiver. You're a number one receiver. You got to make a play for your backup quarterback there. I mean, you just do. Second one on the sideline, I did think Minka Fitzpatrick made a great play again, but if you're a number one receiver, got to make that play in crunch time. So, but that said, you have a tight end who just had the greatest receiving season statistically in the history of the franchise. You know, broke Michael Jackson's 1996 record in 16 games, mind you. So give him credit on that. And you have Marquise Brown, who, whether he's a true number one or not, still had a pretty good season, even if it was disappointing down the stretch. I like Rashad Bateman. I do. I liked what I saw from him, especially considering he missed so much time early on with the groin injury and subsequent surgery. I like him. You know, I still have some cautious optimism for guys like Devin Duvernay and even James Prochet, who I think, you know, being a healthy scratch the last couple of weeks in favor of Sammy Watkins kind of made me scratch my head, considering he had played well in Cincinnati. Not saying they're done at wide receiver or they couldn't make a move at wide receiver, but all these different issues we've talked about, all these different positions where they're going to have to make adjustments, additions, changes, subtractions, whatever. Wide receiver is the one position where I'm not going to be pounding the table saying they need a big time star wide receiver this offseason. Again, you never turn down a potential opportunity, not saying that they should refuse and say, oh, we don't need a receiver whatsoever, but that is actually a position where, you know, I was considering all the other elements of where the O-line was, where the running game was, where Lamar was even before he got hurt, to your point, wasn't playing at a high level in November and early December before he gets hurt. You know, wide receiver, I like some of the things I saw from that group. I did. And that's crazy for me to say that. You know that, because I've been a broken record for years and years and years. But
well, the same people that want Snoop Huntley to get the long-term contracts at Lamar, they want Antonio Brown too. So, you know, there's down the line of all of these wants and needs. But that being said, the line needs to be shored up. They need to figure out the running back situation for Gus and for Dobbins and for who's really going to run the ball, because this is the dirty little secret, and it goes back to the beginning of this, the original sin. The original sin is having a quarterback that runs in the linebackers 21 times on November 5th. You can't have that. You can't have that. Like, that's not going to work, and it didn't work this year. So whatever they need to figure out, they need to figure out how Lamar throws it more and runs it less, personally.
Although he got hurt on a passing play.
I knew you'd bring that up.
I mean, I'm just saying, and look, your point is well taken. You know, you and I have volleyed and sparred over elements of that. I think we're in agreement on certain parts.
I've given
it
a nickname. It's the original sin. The original sin is having a quarterback that runs in the linebackers. That's the reason no one drafted the kid and changed their whole team around, because they were afraid of getting him hurt. They don't think it's good business to do that.
Although you could be the Browns and draft Baker Mayfield first overall, and you don't have your guy anyway. So, you know, there were lots of teams that should have drafted Lamar Jackson. We can talk about the long-term viability of this, but the Ravens won a lot of football games with him as their quarterback the last 3 years, 4 years. So let's keep that in mind.
And now they have to pay $40 million, and can they win?
Which is true of any.
And can they win?
Which is true of any team with a young quarterback they're going to have to pay. We'll see if Buffalo continues to win with Josh Allen.
It is really unfortunate, the window on 14-2 2 years ago, and how good they could have been this year. Because beside all of this and all the team that DaCosta put together and the team that they believed they were bringing to training camp in August really would have been good. It would have been it would have been good enough to still be playing. There's no doubt in my mind that had they put the team on the field, and that's ifs and buts and candies and nuts and all that, and that's fine. But as a fan, I'm okay with that. As a critic, I'm okay with that. As a sports talk show host, I'm okay with that. But in the aftermath, we could talk about how it all got burned down, because it did.
Well, this is where I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, and I want to give him a nod, because he's a guy from a media standpoint, showed a lot of maturing over the years. Jimmy Smith said it late last week. If was a fifth, we'd all be drunk. So... I think that's a rap lyric. If I'm not mistaken, I don't know.
I'm going to have to look that up, see if that's Nas or Nelly or DMX.
You know what, though? But it's true. And you kind of look at where they were last year. They had the COVID situation. They lose Ronnie Stanley. You and I talked about that from the moment they lost Ronnie Stanley, what we thought that meant for the football team, and it proved to be at least partially true. You know, they won a playoff game, and then they bow out in the divisional round. And this year, I mean, would they have been the best team in football if they, first of all, you can't assume to stay completely healthy either. Let's be clear about that. Everything we're talking about, you're not going to have all those things, go your way. You're not going to have a perfect injury-free season. The only injury-free season is not playing football, as I say quite often. But if they have a more normal assortment of injuries, a normal number of injuries, they're in the playoff field, and I'm guessing they're duking it out with Kansas City and Tennessee and Buffalo for that number one seed. You know, they're in that territory. I mean, they were kind of sort of hanging around that territory 6 weeks ago, despite the fact that not really looking the part on a weekly basis and, kind of having that magician hat every week that was, they were figuring out ways to win games that they didn't feel like they deserved all the time. But there's no question. And that's where, again, you have to come back to this and say, how do we react without overreacting to what happened this year? Make changes where they need to be made, control what we can control. But otherwise, at some point, you just have to make peace with the idea that they went through a hell of a lot and they lost a hell of a lot of good to great football players over the last 4 months. And ultimately, you need players. Coaches, Wink Martindale talks about it all the time. Ultimately, it's about the players. Yeah, you can scheme, and play calling is important, and you need to know to, where to put guys in the right spot to be successful. That's very important. I don't want to diminish coaching, but at the same time, you can have the best coaches in the world, and if they have the worst players in the league, they're not winning anything. I mean, that's just the truth. So, you know, the Ravens, they weren't good enough at the end. And could they have been good enough if they stayed healthier? Sure. But it's not the way it worked out. So, you know, you move on and try to get better. And you understand that there are going to be challenges this offseason, you know, in terms of who they're going to re-sign. You know, you got Bradley Bozeman, you got Patrick Ricard. We talked about the guys on the defensive line. What do you do at offensive tackle? Do you bring, you know, I'm guessing you don't bring Villanueva back, but, you know, are you comfortable with Patrick McCary being your right tackle? But what does that mean in terms of who your swing tackle is going to be? Do you trust Ronnie Stanley's going to come back and be pre-injury form? They really don't have any choice but to just hope that happens. You know, you're not going to cut them. You can't trade them at this point. So it is what it is. So there's going to be a lot of things that they can do. And then there are going to be more things where they just say, we're just going to have to hope for the best in this regard. And that sounds kind of flippant. And I'm not trying to be dismissive, but like I said, you don't have an unlimited salary cap or unlimited draft picks to just plan to have as many injuries as they had this year and think things are going to be okay. It's just not the case. Could they have weathered it a little bit better? Sure. I mean, Tennessee lost a lot of guys and they figured out a way to be in the playoffs. And they're the number one seed, you know, and maybe that says a lot for the AFC more than anything else, or doesn't say a whole lot for the AFC, I should say. But
they got to play Jacksonville twice.
Yeah, I mean, you can go down the list, and we said it. The Ravens, one reason the Ravens were 8-3 was they had a pretty advantageous schedule over the first two-thirds of the season. We said it back in May when the schedule came out. I vividly remember us talking about it. I said, they better get off to a good start, because that's a bear of a final stretch that they're going to play. It was. And then you lose your best two players, you know, best player on each side
of the
ball. We
thought Green Bay and the Rams were playoff teams, and they were. Nobody thought the Steelers were a playoff team, and they were, right? So, like, we're talking
Cincinnati.
About the end of the year. And Cincinnati, sure.
No one thought Cincinnati. I mean, Pittsburgh, there was, you know, you and I even talked about whether the Steelers were dead just yet. And look, to be very clear, I don't think the Steelers are very good at all.
They're in the playoffs.
They're in. And, you know, hey, that's why you add a seventh seed to the tournament. Well, you're going to get some mediocrity in there. And that's what happened. The Ravens would have been that team had things gone their way over the last couple of weeks and they'd won a game. You know, we would have been talking about the Ravens as a playoff team, even though, well, they really weren't that good by the season's end because of the attrition they experienced. So go into the offseason, you try to get better. You try to make good decisions. You react without overreacting. And that's going to be the key. And you hope, talking a year from now, that they're in the playoffs and they have a much more representative roster still standing. And then you roll the dice and you see what happens at that point.
Luke Jones can be found out at Baltimore Luke on the social media thing. I am wearing my Rofo Chicken Palooza 21. We get almost up. It's at the halfway point now for Chicken Palooza for 22. So it's all coming back. Appreciate all of our sponsors. We'll be talking to many of them as we switch gears here. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. We're going to get that back out on the road. I told Jen and the folks over at Nacho Mama's just to hold the quesadilla for me and the burrito tacos. I'll get there. I think we're going to try to kick it off in February. I got some great plans for May and for the summer for our 31st anniversary. And Luke will be hanging around talking about the baseball. Maybe there'll be baseball season. I'm not sure. You'll be able to find both of us out at WNST AM 1570, where we never stop talking Baltimore positive.